the way that we apply mindfulness is very important in how we work with our habits. And if the body is habitually tense, or if the mind is habitually tense, they really work together. Whatever tension we're feeling in the body will affect the mind, of course. Whatever stress there is in our work, in our family life, in our personal relationships, in our thoughts about ourselves, our attitudes, about our own progress or well-being or success in life or failure, whatever it is that the mind is preoccupied with, that will create tension if we're suffering from any form of unhappiness. So is there some pervading or prevailing unhappiness? This is to be investigated. So what is investigation? And how is it different from the mind pondering? How is it practiced? How much intentionality and direction is involved? Investigation is a factor of enlightenment. So it's very important for practice. Investigation and mindfulness are practically inseparable because they're both factors of enlightenment and they both work together beautifully. So mindfulness establishes itself on the object. And just like when you're using the focusing on the object and sustaining focus. So sati points the mind, it's vitakka vichara, that pointing to the object, aiming at it, and then sustaining attention. This sustaining attention on the object is exactly that, vitakka vichara. Vichara is dhamma vichaya, the same root. And vichaya is the act of distinguishing, sorting. So mindfulness takes the object into our field of awareness and is focusing on it. But dhamma vichaya is then not just focusing on the object, but kind of checking it out and looking at its qualities and understanding our relationship, our connection to it, our feeling about it. What is this object in our field of awareness? What does it present? Now, very often we come to the meditation object with an attitude. Supposing that we're feeling a lot of restlessness and we're not sure that this is the right kind of retreat for us. Maybe we're thinking we should have signed up for something else. Friday night, what I could have been doing, and here I am stuck in this retreat center in rural Ontario with people I don't even know. The mind can have many opinions about that. They could be negative. So of course, if there's already a negative mood, then the Dhamma Vichaya is colored by that, it's biased. And so your investigation, your ability to distinguish qualities and to sort through what is conducive to mindfulness and clear comprehension and what is not. And of course, in the Satipatthana Sutta, we see that the five hindrances are to be dealt with, and the seven factors of enlightenment are to be developed. So we're decreasing, diminishing the hindrances, and we're augmenting, advancing in the factors of enlightenment. So before we really can establish a right kind of sati, a right alert and clear understanding of where to focus, how to focus, and how to sustain focus so that we can deepen instilling the fabrications of the mind, we have to clear away all these thoughts, meanderings, ponderings. Ponder is a good word and not a good word, because ponder could be distracted thought, it could be colored, biased, prejudiced, unobjective thought. And the best kind of sati dhamma vichaya and sati sampajanya, or sati and clear mindfulness and clear understanding of where the mind is abiding, must be accompanied by wholesome qualities, not by aversion, not by aggression, not swallowing the object or trying to get rid of it. Maybe we're tired, bored of the breath. So there's boredom, restlessness, or a pervading anxiety which we habitually have, but we're not aware of. We don't even realize how tense we already are and how much tension we bring into the moment. But that's why this investigation is so important. Imagine that you're on an archaeological dig and you're out in a field somewhere. It's hot. You didn't have quite enough to eat. You're not rehydrated. And you're looking for some mysterious artifacts in the soil. But you don't have a lot of patience. And you've made up your mind where it's going to be. But you don't find anything. So you get very frustrated. Then you dig a little here and you dig a little there, but you don't go very deep. You don't find anything. So you see where I'm going with this. The investigation needs and is supported by interest and predisposition to be present, to be with, to look, to listen, not to assume, oh, well, there's the breath again. Because every breath is new. Maybe there's some different quality. We need to be present for that. We need to be so attentive, so meticulous in our awareness that we can differentiate breath by breath. If you're focusing on the belly or on a certain body area, maybe you want to focus on your attention. Then when you first focus on it, there may be a sense of dismissal or get rid of it because you don't like it. There's an attitude. But the attitude that's most conducive to good investigation is curiosity, interest, gratitude. We're happy. We're so lucky. What an opportunity to be able to investigate our stress. Suffering. What is it? What does it feel like? Rather than, I hate it, I wish it would go away. So we have to have a bit of stability in the mind before we even begin true investigation. Otherwise, our investigation may be very superficial. And we have an expectation. Well, I'm practicing mindfulness. I should be able to get rid of my tension. But this is completely a mental construct, it's a concept, and it's creating conditions which will not lead to good results, wholesome results. So what's happening is the mind is weighed down, it's made heavy by unwholesome qualities. So if we can bring up metta and karuna, compassion, if the situation is not exactly as we want, but bring up some compassion for these conditions. Think about how lucky we are to be in this kind of situation, to even know about this practice. Because the fact that we know about it and we're learning how to deepen our agility with it is going to be a tremendous tool for our mind. But it takes practice. And before we can get good results from Dhamma Vichaya, from this quality investigation, we have to deal with some obstructions in the mind, some hindrances, and get a little bit of quiet, a little bit of stability, a little bit of calm. And wisdom will help us, is to just ponder, realize Yes, this is a wonderful opportunity. Bring up the gratitude, the thanksgiving, and feel the good blessing of this. If we feel blessed, then the mind will perk up and be happy. But if we feel sorry that we're here, then we're just adding to our suffering. Of course, the tension is not going to go anywhere. These are certain cues to help us realize how much we can inadvertently contribute to our own tension by our attitude to what we're supposed to be doing when we meditate. But if we can come to the cushion without any expectation, just with the intention to be still, to offer our attention, pure attention without expectation, we don't know. We're in a wonderland. The mind is a wondrous place. We never know what it's going to produce. Our job is to practice right effort. If there are unwholesome qualities, we notice them and we use the antidote of developing wholesome qualities. We let them go. We open a door, and just like you would, if there's a wasp in your room, you take a little live trap and you gently catch it and put it outside. You don't kill it, beat it. At least we don't in the monastery. We have these lovely little insect traps. We can lift them up safely and put them outside. So that's what we have to do with our kilesas. A kilesa is a killing quality. It kills. It's not helpful. It's a defilement, an impurity in the mind. It needs laundering. So you put a little detergent. The detergent is wholesomeness, a virtuous attitude, a gratitude, thanksgiving. Again, you say, a wise seeing, a noticing. Ah, if mindfulness is sharp, it knows that that can be let go. You shoo it away, sweep it out, gently, not angrily, not aggressive, patient and wise, skillful. Now the first three bojangas, sati, dhammavicaya, and right effort, vidya, those three bojangas are active, dynamic enlightenment factors. So they're the precursors for the last four. And if we practice those with agility and good energy, like we really put forth that right effort to stay mindful, to investigate carefully, and to see what is really happening, staying with the object, looking, listening to it, knowing it, seeing it as it truly is, then it speaks to us. It's like you're the archaeologist, you're digging with your tool, and suddenly you hit a metal object. What's that? You dig more, and you uncover more, and you see a shape. And lo and behold, it's a pot, an ancient pot. It's been there for centuries, and you've just discovered it. You had no idea it was there. With Dhammavicaya, it depends on the depth of our ability to see, and that grows with the practice, because the mind cannot conceptually know that object, but we can know it by knowing it, by seeing it, by continually seeing and seeing. And then as the hindrances fall away, then the object is more prominent in our field of vision, and our field of vision is sharpened because we're looking with more clarity, more wisdom, more attention, more stability, more calm, more investigation. So we're piercing the object and we see it better and better. I remember when I went to Montreal I was raised there. And I went years later to see the old house where I used to live. And it looked so small. Because when I was a child, it looked big. And I remembered it like that. But when I came back to see it, I was an adult and it looked very, everything looked small. Because after years, our way of seeing has changed. And the things that we remember, and then we see them again, they're different. So if you keep practicing the things that you thought you knew what they were, you will get insight. The more insight you have into the reality of your experience, the more that experience will speak to you in new ways, and your insight will deepen. And you'll begin to see objects that were very solid as just impermanent, arising and ceasing in front of your eyes. You might begin to see their atomic nature without a microscope. Really? Yeah. What we thought was solid and immovable, when we study it and look at it again and again with the eyes of Dhamma, we begin to see the characteristics, the ultimate characteristics. It's just a process. It's just atomic nature is revealed. We begin to see it in pixel form. Just like if you enlarge something on your computer, all you see are tiny little pixels. The closer you look, the more strange it is. It has no shape, no form. It isn't an object. It's always changing. It's not the same. And in fact, the whole universe is like that. But we take all these objects to be solid, real, immovable, permanent. This as well. But it's not. So in practice, repeatedly looking, we will investigate more and more deeply and see things as they truly are. And the more we see things as they truly are, we will be immersed in the object. The attention that we're practicing to develop pierces the object to the extent that there's no separation between that which sees and that which is seen. Then what? Explore. Discover. But our tension is a habit of mind that translates into a habit of the body, the way we hold ourselves and the way the world impacts us. And then we come to the practice and we slowly unwind and open. Now, we tend to focus on what we see, but what we really need to focus on is the way we're seeing. Now, this is really the crux of what I'm trying to say. Instead of being so concerned about the object, look at the way the mind is approaching that act or that process of seeing. Where is the mind abiding as it sees? What is the condition of the mind in seeing that object? So reflectively, let the object take us back to how we observe. Is there an objective way of seeing? So rather than the object, we're going reflexive to objective, not subjective. Subjective is a me and a my. We're looking for non-identification. Seeing without the me-ness. There is seeing. It's not even I am seeing. It's seeing when the ocular observes and the objective world appears. Then there's contact. When there's contact, there's consciousness, I consciousness occurs. But in that process, there's no I. We are accustomed, we are habituated to identify with the seer. But there is no seer. And that's the wisdom that will arise when we know with the knowing mind, the mind that knows the object will not have an identifier in it. It will not be my mind. It will just be mentality observing materiality, or mentality observing mentality, knowing the mind state. The object of our attention could be a mind state, a quality, a hindrance, a bojanga, joy, piti. Let's come back for a minute to going from the dynamic factors of the bojanga to the resultant factors, which are, there's piti, joy, bliss, pasada, pasadi, calm, like to really see things as they are, brings us happiness. Because we've been so blind. We're blinded by our suffering. I am suffering. Just to call it your own suffering is already a blindness. There is suffering. And there is a way out, because we can contemplate the Four Noble Truths. Therefore, we can know that if suffering exists, there's an origin. What is the cause? The I am. We've created this. But if it's just flowing, which is just causes and conditions, arising and ceasing moment by moment, impermanent, dukkha, they hurt, pain in the body or mind. So it's the belonging that creates the second arrow. And then there's the samadhi, samadhi upeka bojanga. So samadhi results from this way of applying our attention. Diligently, continuously applied in this way, the hindrances are subdued and joy arises. Then the mind is calm. Vidyam piti pasadi. When that kind of effort is produced, the result is joy. We feel a sublimity of joy that is not worldly. This is the joy that the Buddha prescribes. To develop, to mature, to awaken the mind needs the joy. The mind, it's already waking up when it feels that joy. Yes. But then joy deepens into calm, a peace, a happiness, a prevailing well-being. And that's the characteristic that brings about, manifests as upekkha, which is equanimity. And those four qualities, they're the results of awakening. Joy and the calm of the mind. And then there's that deep, that samadhi, it's the peace, which is the mind completely stable and still, able to go so deep of stillness. It's no longer reaching, no longer wandering, distracting, looking for artifacts in the sand. We found what we want. We want this stillness. We are so focused that the awakened mind can then emerge from that. Even glimmerings of awakening. Upekkha is the field is seeded for awakening. So when we have highly developed upekkha, we are ready to receive the deepest insight of the path. So kindness is a quality that we bring to this investigation. And these factors of enlightenment, then when those results occur, there's joy and there's a calm in the mind. Of course, the mind becomes more powerful. It can see better. It's no longer seeing with tension. Mindfulness, rightly applied, is not tense. It's wise and discerning. It has left tension behind when it's an enlightenment factor. If you're experiencing tension, then there's more work to be done in dispelling the worry, the anxiety, the hindrance. So don't worry about the worry, don't fear the fear, but just mindfully sweep them out so that we can focus better on what we're trying to know and see clearly with wisdom and understanding, piercing through to insight. When we think of Dhamma Vichaya, Vichaya is a kind of abiding. You're abiding in the truth of the Dhamma nature of what you're investigating. You're looking at its true characteristics, not its color or its shape, but its actual qualities, because those will contribute to our waking up. Is it permanent or impermanent? Does it bring pain or is it pleasant? And is there any ownership? Is there a me that has this object? Objects don't belong to us. They just are passing through our awareness. And that helps us to let go any sense of clinging or attachment. And this is very important, as the ability to let go the objects of attachment and let go the kilesas that arise in association with those sensory experiences or with our attachment to sense objects. Because attachment in itself spells defilement. There's wanting, there's ill will when we have pain instead of pleasure, the desire to get rid of, and there's always the restlessness of looking for the next object, the next sensory hit, the next pleasant experience. It's endless. We're in the seat of the spiritual aspirant, and we're driving our Dhamma vehicle. It's like a boat in the stream of worldly currents, and we're trying to get across that stream to the other shore, to the shores of freedom from the currents of the world. Our awakened awareness. These bodhisattvas are indispensable. Like food is for the body, these bodhisattvas are for our awakening. So I hope that would answer your questions.